supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. That was the scene in neighborhoods across Philadelphia and beyond last night as the Eagles won a long-coveted Super Bowl championship. The celebration continued into the morning commute. Getting off a train in Center City, Philadelphia, Jack Hilferty of Langhorne said it was the perfect win in a perfect matchup.
It was almost like longtime fan of the Eagles, so we finally got it done, but also longtime like hater of the Patriots because we wanted to end that streak. So it was a really good time watching the game.
And today, many of those fans were waiting at Philadelphia International Airport as the team arrived home. WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Arendt was there.
It began with a handful of fans staring at an empty tarmac. Soon, hundreds were standing along a plastic fence at the airport's perimeter, analyzing every move of each plane that landed.
It's coming this way. Turn it around.
With just the Eagles' fight song and body heat to stay warm, they waited. And then around 2:45 p.m., an American Airlines jumbo jet pulled into view. And out walked Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie, holding that elusive Lombardi trophy aloft.
They're coming over here!
They're coming over!
The Eagles players filmed the fans with their phones, and the fans filmed them right back, like a modern mirror of mutual affection. Amid the frenzy, a little boy named DJ Fletcher started crying because he couldn't see. Someone grabbed him and reunited him with his dad, who then held him in the air.
I see Fletcher Cox! I see Fletcher Cox!
Just to see their heroes on this day, after this wait, was enough. Avi Wolfman-Arendt, WHYY News.
Around town last night, fans, including John Smith of West Philadelphia, could barely contain their excitement.
I waited for this moment my whole life, every day, every season, and we finally did it, baby. Oh, my God. We did it. Ha-ha. That's what we think. Underdogs, right? Ha-ha. Look at us now, baby. Parade time. Parade time.
As for that parade, city officials disclosed today that the parade honoring the Super Bowl champs will take place Thursday morning at 11, running from Broad Street and Patterson Avenue up to the Philadelphia Museum of Art. Mayor Jim Kenney says officials are expecting twice as many attendees as there were when the Phillies won the World Series in 2008.
Phillies were estimated about 1 million plus. This will probably be 2 million plus. So we need some more additional area for people to be in.
And now that the game's been won, it's time to collect on the bet. Several Philadelphia institutions made wagers with their Boston counterparts on the outcome of the Super Bowl, including Yards Brewery, the Philadelphia Museum of Art, Woody's Bar, and the Roman Catholic Archdiocese. The Museum of the American Revolution made a bet with the Massachusetts Historical Society in Boston. The loser has to deliver a lecture about why the winning city is the true cradle of liberty. Museum President Michael Quinn says the president of the Historical Society is new to the job and immediately made a losing bet.
The new president and CEO of the Massachusetts Historical Society is a very talented woman by the name of Catherine Algor, whom I've known for 15 years. As I was congratulating her on her appointment to the position, we realized that, you know, we could be on opposite sides of the Super Bowl thing.
Quinn said he never started to prepare notes for a possible lecture about Boston, believing he'd never be called upon to deliver one. Well, joining me now from Minneapolis is Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News sports columnist Marcus Hayes. How's it going there, Marcus?
Dave, I can't wait to get actually back in the studio. It is down to 13 degrees. It was 17 when we woke up, so it'll be warmer than Minneapolis, even in Philadelphia.
You called this an Eagles win, but not by this margin and absolutely not this many points and yards. What happened?
Well, you know what? Both offensive lines played extremely well. Nick Foles wasn't pressured the way we thought he might be. The blitzes weren't effective that the Patriots ran. By far, the best coach in the league this year, Doug Peterson.
By far.
It's not close. You know, it's funny, the official Coach of the Year award is the Associated Press Award. And this year, Sean McVay, the Los Angeles, very good Los Angeles Rams coach / offensive coordinator, he won the award. Mike Zimmer finished second. Bill Belichick also got one vote. And honestly, you could just name it the Bill Belichick Award. He's the best coach in the league year in and year out. Doug Peterson got one vote. Doug Peterson beat all three of those guys. He beat McVay, he beat Zimmer, and then he beat Bill Belichick, the greatest coach maybe in the history of football. He beat him in the Super Bowl, a defensive coach, by scoring 41 points Nick Foles.
And as you noted in your article, that's without seven of their top 26 players, many of whom will presumably come back next season. But what of MVP Nick Foles? The papers are already saying he could merit a second-round pick if we choose to trade him. Is that something that you think might be considered?
It will be, but it probably won't be considered and probably shouldn't be considered until Carson Wentz. It shows that his knee injury is fully healed. You can't risk another Super Bowl run on rushing Carson Wentz back, especially when Nick Foles has such a command of the offense and a familiarity with both the offensive line, his running backs, and his receivers. They've got great continuity. They don't want to ruin that in order to get a second-round pick. However, if Carson Wentz is healthy, exiting training camp especially, you really have to consider trading Nick Foles, especially if you get like maybe a 2-4. Nick Foles will probably be insurance through the summer, but then his value becomes very, very high for the Eagles if he is, you know, as good at the end of training camp as he is now. I don't know that you can't afford to not invest in your future.
You said earlier that they should just call the Coach's Award the Bill Belichick Award, and with that, I see Las Vegas is already positioning the Patriots as most likely to win next year, but the Eagles are second. Do you think that's just about right?
I don't think it's right. No, I think it's ridiculous. It's almost as though people can't learn. The Eagles are in a much better situation going forward than the Patriots, pretty much in every aspect. The Patriots are losing both of their coordinators, both offensive and defensive. Tom Brady is again contemplating retirement, as is Rob Gronkowski. The Eagles will have at least three or four players coming back healthy and two or three younger players playing more and playing better, and the coaching staff is coming back intact for a third season. This is the kind of, disrespect that you get from, the great unwashed when there's no Carson Wentz, when Carson Wentz isn't around and isn't necessarily guaranteed to start the season. If Carson Wentz had been the MVP of the Super Bowl, healthy, thrown for 372 yards, three touchdowns, caught a touchdown, and been the MVP of the Super Bowl, I think the Eagles would supplant the Patriots as the favorite. But Nick Foles gets no respect, even though he's got a big, shiny silver football.
Marcus,
as the MVP trophy.
Thanks, Marcus. Safe travels.
Thank you, Dave.
Daily News columnist Marcus Hayes on Newsworks Tonight. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf is preparing to give his fourth budget address next week, the annual speech to the legislature laying out his priorities. At the same time, the Democrat is gearing up for his reelection campaign. Among other variables, he's trying to portray himself as a strong environmental advocate. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick looks at how his record matches his rhetoric.
Environmentalists are frustrated with Wolf's first term. Joe Minot heads the Philadelphia-based Clean Air Council. He says Wolf has potential, but he hasn't lived up to it yet.
Well, if I were a professor and he was my student, he would get an incomplete at this point.
Other advocates, like Mark Zebist of the Natural Resources Defense Council, say Wolf could be using his bully pulpit to push for green causes, but he isn't.
I think that we're looking for Governor Wolf to show more leadership on clean energy. Obviously, there are challenges with the General Assembly as it's currently constituted, but the Assembly won't get any better without Governor Wolf pushing it.
The governor has repeatedly clashed with the Republican-controlled legislature over basic stuff. His first year in office saw a historic months-long stalemate over the state budget. Minot thinks those experiences stuck with Wolf.
I think generally the governor is afraid of the legislature.
For their part, Wolf staffers say they are working diligently in a challenging political environment to protect the natural environment. For example, last fall, Wolf signed a bill aimed at boosting solar power. He also pushed through a package of stronger regulations for Marcellus Shale gas drillers, and he banned further leasing of state park and forest land for oil and gas development. Sam Robinson is Wolf's Deputy Secretary of Policy and Planning.
It is a challenging place to work. It's a polarized space in Pennsylvania, very clearly. The governor has throughout pushed for a balanced approach to the regulation that we're doing.
But when it comes to climate change, arguably the biggest environmental issue of the day, Wolf talks the talk, but he doesn't walk the walk. That's according to Veronica Koptis, who heads the Western Pennsylvania-based Center for Coalfield Justice.
So it's hard to take his public commitments to action on climate change and the statements he made about the Paris Climate Accord whenever in his own state he's not actually taking real steps.
For example, Wolf hasn't followed through on a campaign pledge to join the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, known as REGGI. It's a market-based program among northeastern states to reduce emissions. At a recent press conference, Wolf denied ever pledging to join REGGI.
I don't remember making that promise. In fact, I do remember I didn't make that promise.
But actually, he did. It was part of his official platform, which is still visible on a cached version of his campaign website. And here's what he said back in 2014 while running for office.
I want to be part of any compact that's trying to make our air cleaner. And I think REGGI tries to do that.
Green groups have also criticized Wolf for not joining the U.S. Climate Alliance. It's a bipartisan group of state governors pushing back against President Donald Trump's decision to withdraw the U.S. from the Paris Climate Agreement. Wolf is one of three Democratic governors who has not joined. He's dismissed it as symbolic, saying Pennsylvania is already on track to meet the Paris goals.
I'm not sure what is served by the symbolic gesture of signing on to something that we're already doing a better job on.
But environmentalists say his refusal to join is also symbolic. Again, here's Joe Minot of the Clean Air Council.
He doesn't seem to have taken a very strong public stance on climate change, which most people think is an existential threat to our very survival.
Minot and others say they're still hoping to see more concrete action on the environment from the governor later this year, or if he gets a second term. Marie Cusick, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
With a bigger reach than, yes, even the Super Bowl, golf gained an out-of-this-world toehold 47 years ago today. Let's tee off with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, for this course, do you recommend a driver, an iron, or a putter?
Given the way gravity is affecting things on the moon, being one-sixth of that of Earth, I'd really recommend the driver. That way you can get the greatest distance down the lunar fairway you possibly can. You're right, it was 47 years ago when Apollo 14 landed on the surface of the moon. Alan Shepard, Stuart Roosa, and Ed Mitchell were the astronauts on board, and it was Stuart Roosa who stayed on board the command module that orbited the moon while Alan Shepard and Ed Mitchell actually went down to the surface.
Not a surprise that Alan Shepard had that honor. He'd been around since the Mercury program.
In fact, he was the only Mercury astronaut to make it to the moon, to actually land and walk around on the surface of the moon. And he and Mitchell stayed on the moon about 33 hours. About 9.5 hours of that was EVA, extravehicular activity, actually out walking around on the moon, during which they placed on the surface a number of different science experiments and collected 95 pounds of rocks to bring back.
Now back to that golf game between Shepard and Mitchell. Who played the role of caddy?
It was Mitchell who was the caddy in this case, but he didn't carry very far at all, because what Shepard actually did was he combined two tools to create this quote-unquote driver, and his suit was so inflexible that he could only swing with one arm. He couldn't really adopt the golfer's stance for the swing, but he did a pretty good job. His statement was that he thought the ball that he hit the best flew for miles and miles and miles. As it turns out, it looks like the maximum distance was probably about 400 yards. But given the handicaps he had of the lunar surface with the dust and the suit and everything else, 400 yards is pretty good.
Derek, what do you say we continue our exploration of the moon from planet Earth?
Yeah, this is a great week to do that, Dave. Last quarter moon is this Wednesday, February 7th, and this gives you an opportunity to see the moon at a different time of day than you might normally be expecting. Moonrise now comes after 11 p.m., so most people sleeping after that time may not see the moon as it rises on the eastern horizon. But that also means that moonset comes in the morning before noon.
And during this phase, describe the phenomenon known as Earth shine.
So as we look at the moon, we see that bright portion, that's in direct sunlight. The other portion of the moon that's sort of dusky in its appearance, that illumination comes from light being reflected from the Earth up to the surface of the moon and then back down to us to see. So this Earth shine, you can try to catch some of that during the morning also. The challenge will be the contrast of the sky. Because the contrast is not so high, things will look a little milky, and that might make it difficult to see the Earth shine, but give it a shot anyway.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.